It's kind of a different world. The newer digital standard is actually better than HBSD in terms of this ability to be picked up. And who knows? We may get the opportunity to experience that fairly soon, or maybe not so soon. K2RW, K2EJ.
WH2CBKL is back on.
Yeah.
WS2S.
Pretty fine, Andy. We'll be going over to you in a minute, Andy. One of the things that an awful lot of people who think they want to watch over the air television broadcast, digital television broadcast today, let me drop you the beeps. They think that just putting up an aerial is good enough because the currently used HVSB digital television has a strong vulnerability to co-channel interference and certain kinds of multipath interference. A reflection off a water tower can give you grief, inter-symbol distortion, where it'll give you an indication of poor signal-to-noise ratio. And the signal-to-noise ratio could be great, it just can't tolerate the inter-symbol distortion. Or if there's a co-channel interference, if on Long Island you're suddenly, because of a band opening, watching television on that frequency from Philadelphia, that signal from Philadelphia better be a lot of dB weaker, otherwise it's going to give you grief. Therefore, a person who wants to watch over-the-air broadcast television these days has a great advantage of having a rotator on his antenna. And he's not taking it for best signal-to-noise ratio. He's taking it for the best combination. Every antenna, every broadcast television area antenna you can buy these days, it's got a bunch of fingers in space at all of those individual frequencies. And as such, as you carefully aim that antenna, you can quite often find an aiming direction, which is not necessarily the best signal strength from New York City, but it's the best combination of the signal from New York City, as well as taking the co-channel interference, or the reflection of the water tower, and pushing it into one of the nulls of the antenna pattern. So with an antenna rotator, there's a lot of times when you can get digital television reception today, where in the old days, you would use the rotator just to peek up for noise, for snow on the screen. But nowadays, there's a lot of advantage of that rotator. Am I wording that correctly, Eric? K-E-2-E-J, K-2-R-I-W?
Actually, I was a question on all this.
K2RW, K2J. Yeah, you're right. Actually, the advances in antenna designs, the newer ones that are coming out, actually have sharper patterns to them. They're supposedly better, but I guess we'll see as they go out there. Having transmitters in multiple places is an issue with HVSD, but as we go to HVSD3, a lot of those problems are going to disappear, and then we'll have new ones.
Yeah, before I go over to Rich, let me run that one by again. Right now, you have centralized over-the-air television broadcasting, like Empire State Building or World Trade Center. I think you're telling me with the new standard coming up, we're going to be becoming a little bit more European. In other words, you could have multiple broadcast stations, multiple broadcast locations within a particular metropolitan area. And those signals will all be compatible with each other, even though it's coming from multiple locations. I think the new standard allows that. And I think European is doing it that way. I got it slightly right here, Eric. KE2EJ, KQRIW.
KQRIW, KE2EJ. Yes, actually, you're right. In Europe, they're not doing... We're actually more capable with ATSC3 to do what we do similar to what we do with cell sites, put multiple transmitters all over the place and have them coexist with each other and not bother one another because they're synchronous with each other. And they're interleaved in a way where that one can occupy space where the other one isn't occupying space. And that's actually one of the complaints of some of the folks. Actually, somebody came out and say, well, with ATSC3, there's going to be RF chaos because there's a zillion different ways you can transmit. And they're hoping the FCC to put their finger on one or two of them and say, this is the way you're going to do it, but that hasn't happened. So, we'll see about that. But yeah, CLFDM doesn't have the the multiple reflection problems. It handles multipath one heck of a lot better than 8VSB does. A portable Walkman TV becomes possible with the 8VSB. With the ATSC3, which actually there currently is a version of it that runs on 8VSB called Mobile 8VSB, and it sort of works, but the serial FDM method works much better.
So it sounds like something to look forward to. And I guess we had the choice, we had the option a few years ago to be more European, so to speak, and the United States says, no, with our pride, we can do it better. And they chose 8VSB. So you got a question on all of this television stuff. Because you've got cable TV and you don't have over-the-air broadcast problems, as I see it, Rich, for you, as long as you're willing to pay that cable television bill or the satellite television bill, what standard is transmitted to you doesn't matter as much, is my guess. But you got a question there, Glad Rich. N2EO, K2LIW, and the TechNet.
N2EO. Will my standards change? I have Fios. And the other part of the question, they're advertising now HDTV Ultra. Will I be able to get that eventually?
You've got that, Eric.
You're talking about UHD, Ultra High Def, is that right, Richie?
I think he is, and with his Fios, will he be seeing ultra high density sometime in the near future? He's asking for a guess on your part for that one, Eric. Go ahead.
Well, does Richie have a 4K set? If he doesn't have a 4K set, he's never going to see it. And if you got a 4K set, it's already on Fios.
You've got it, Rich.
Okay, well, we don't. But you know what I just had? The television broke down. And would you believe there were still people out there fixing televisions? I didn't get it, but a guy came out here. They said, if I don't fix it, $50. If I do fix it, $165. He took the back off very rapidly. And he said the motherboard is bad. I don't know how he figured that, but he fixed it.
So I think you're saying the less expensive approach was to repair the current set. And that's a bit amazing because various people are complaining about the fact we're becoming the throwaway society where we repair nothing. So your set got repaired by replacing its motherboard. And that was done for what price, Rich, N2EO, K2LIW?
Parts and labor, $165. I have looked my setup on PC widgets, even though it's old, it's still being sold for close to $400. So I figured to pay to have to fix it. What I'd like to know is how he knew the motherboard was bored. Bad. All he did was look at it. No troubleshooting. He had a white truck. He went out to a truck, came in with a box, a white box, with a motherboard.
Any guesses on this one, Eric? H2EJ, K2RIW.
K2RIW, K2EJ. Well, most frat panels that consist of basically five boards. Power supply, an I.O. board, a motherboard, which maybe has like four or five big chips on it. And don't forget, we do everything with FPGAs these days. And since the flat panels are all digital, the analog part is just a joke. And there's, of course, the analog board for the RF. And then there's the display driver, which is one big fat board with FPGAs on it with a whole lot of little connectors. That's the whole thing.
How about that? Now, I'm going to go over to Andy right now, W-A-2-C-D-L. Andy, it's your choice as to whether or not you want to give us any of the description of what you're doing these days in searching a very mysterious thing, whether or not you think it's appropriate. I mean, it's electronics we're discussing here, and it's RF electronics, and it's a weird condition that's being observed. Your choice as to whether or not you think we should go into that, Andy. To be through CDL, K2RIW, and the tech man. You got it, Andy.
Okay, thanks, Dick. This is a little bit different because we have a guest appearance here on the TechNet tonight, and his name is Bob, or he calls himself Loby. I think that's L-O-B-Y, and that's short for his last name. It's called W-A-2-A-X-Z, and it's Alpha X-Ray Zulu, and he is the authority on the issue that I've been seeing, dealing with grounding causing, or I should say leakage currents causing issues with grounding in our radio system that we just installed. So I know, Dick, you had a bunch of questions you were asking me, and I was and I asked Bob the same questions that you asked, and he was able to answer it better than I could because he is the authority. So, without any further ado, Dick, I'd like to bring it back to you, and you can ask Bob the questions that you asked me that I did not have the answer to, that Bob would. So maybe if you want to go into it, it's a general topic. It's not going to be discussing anything that's proprietary, so I don't think there'll be any issues. Dick, that's your call on that also. I don't think there'll be a problem. Back to you, Dick, and Bob is on board.
And what we're discussing here is that the individual subway stations have chunks of RF electronics that communicates down the subway tube by way of a kind of a transmission line called radiax. It's a kind of a heliax-like piece of coax cable, which has got very carefully cut slots in it so that it slowly radiates the signal. So as the subway train runs between stations, a person with a handy talkie, like an MTA law enforcement person, can talk with his handy talkie, goes out the window, into the radiax, goes into the cable, goes to the nearest station where there is electronics that will receive that signal and sends it on to where it's supposed to go. Now, a recent test procedure was initiated where the quality of the grounding of the individual cabinet of equipment at the subway stations that have the equipment, the grounding was supposed to be confirmed with something like an ohmmeter. You connect an ohmmeter between the cabinet with the equipment and the local grounding bus bar for that particular equipment room, and you're supposed to come up with some small number of ohms, probably a fraction of an ohm. And you put your digital ohmmeter there, the digital voltmeter in the ohmmeter scale, and you watch the needle dancing all over the place because there is an extraneous source of current. The way your ohmmeter works is that it puts, let me drop. Your ohmmeter, when you're on the ohmmeter scale, on a digital voltmeter, or even your triplet or Simpson, puts a certain amount of current into the device under test, like a resistor. And it puts a certain amount of current into it. Depending on the voltage drop, it says, aha, that's a 3-ohm resistor. Well, if there's an extraneous source of current that's independent of your digital voltmeter or your triplet or your Simpson, the needle becomes confusing. It can actually measure negative ohms, if you know what I mean. It's an extraneous source of current. This radiax cable, it appears to be picking up a source of current, which can be in the magnitude of amperes being pumped into the cabinet by way of the radiax cable going between stations. And when that source of current in amperes is competing with the milliamperes putting out with your digital voltmeter, the digital voltmeter can become very confused. So Therefore, the confirmation of the quality of the grounding of the cabinet becomes questionable. And now the sources of that extraneous current, because your individual power supplies that supply the roughly 625 volts to the third rail, and these are power supplies that are capable of at least 5,000 amperes. When your subway train starts up, it draws an awful lot of current off the shoe of the third rail on the 625 volts or 650 volts, whichever it is. So various currents are being launched into the system by the periodic power supplies to the third rail and the periodic loading of the subway train moving down the track. And now the Radiax cable itself is being suspended along the walls of the subway tunnel. Let me drop it. And the suspension device, the thing that's holding the cable, the carrier I'm going to call it, let's call it suspender, depending on how it's grounded, the walls of the subway tunnel itself, how does it keep out the local moisture, water, and whatever? Is that a conductive system? So there's various things that can cause extraneous currents to flow through that cable. This is a little bit of an introduction of what's possibly causing the problem and why the readings look a little bit crazy when somebody puts an ohmmeter trying to confirm that that cabinet is well grounded. Maybe Bob's got much more experience in this one and some further words to add to this. WA2 Alpha, X-ray Zulu, K2LIW in the TechNet. You've got it, Bob. My name is Dick. Okay, maybe Bob is not with us at this time. We did get to him on a whole bunch of other subjects, and maybe he didn't hang in there. He had been talking to us a few minutes before I left. I first talked to you while you were on the telephone, Andy. WA2CDL, the man who normally runs our tune-up clinics at the flea markets. K2IW, you've got it, Andy.
Okay, I'm not sure who that was. The audio is very low. You're very good, Dick. Well, I won't hold it too long. I know you still have a space net to do, or space report, and it's 10:23. But I was hoping that Bob would hang in, but possibly he didn't. I'm actually in my car just having a quick bite to eat because I got to get to work early tomorrow, and I didn't get a chance to have dinner since I was writing the report on what we're talking about on the subject. So, and I finished that. So, let me give it back to you, Dick. And if not tonight, we can get back to this. But it is an interesting topic, and it's kind of curious to see where this is actually coming from. So let me give it back to you before I time it out. And you can pick up the other station. There was someone that was really low in audio. WA2CDL, but go ahead.
Yeah, we heard a good sounding signal and carrier signal, but the audio was extremely low, and the person said, I've got some further comments on this subject. So I'm going to turn it over to that person. He's going to give us his call letters, his name, and then maybe some of that information. Over to that new person, K2LIW in the TechNet. My name is Dick.
K2HUC. Dick, you hear me now? I'm on Echo Link. I don't know how good my phone is working.
Okay, the person on Echo Link, you're in and out. You're in 20% of the time and out 80% of the time, and it alternates back and forth. I'm just getting every third word, so to speak. I think it was HUC, but I'm not sure. Over to you, sir. K2LIW.
Yeah, Dick, bear with me. I'm going to run back to my rig, and because I have a few comments to him on this.
Yeah, I think Steve has worked with not necessarily Subway, but Long Island Railroad systems, which also run on a third rail, so there's going to be a lot of similarity on Steve's experience versus what Andy is experiencing in the subway stations in New York City. And roughly how many miles of total track does the subway system in New York City have, Andy? I'll bet you if we added it all up, it's a ridiculously large number of miles of track and number of subway stations. Do you have any of this, any of the guess at the statistics of that? It's a vast system. I bet you there are very few worldwide subway systems that are more extensive than the ones that go through the four boroughs of New York City. New York City has got five boroughs, and one of them, I think, has no subway. That's a so-called Staten Island or Richmond County. I think it has no subway, but all the other four have this vast system. W-A-2-C-D-L, K-2-R-I-W, go ahead, Andy. How vast is it?
I'm back, Dick. K-D-2-H-U-C.
Andy, first, go ahead, Andy.
Okay. Yeah, and Steve, you sound much better. from what I heard, if you laid out the tracks from end to end, all the tracks, it's at least 600 miles, which will clearly go from here to Chicago. So that's the number that I've heard many times. 600 miles of track total from end to end if you laid it all out in a straight line. Back to you.
600 miles, and wait for the beeps to tell us roughly how many total platforms, how many total stations are there in the four boroughs. Go ahead, Andy.
I don't have an exact number for that, but my guess is 300 and change, or close to that number, because there's 280 locations that I know about. So I would say I'm rounding off to about 300, give or take a few. Roughly speaking, back to you.
Yeah, that's a vast system. Now, Steve, you've worked with third rail systems with thousands of amperes of current flowing through it at numbers like 650 volts. As such, the grounding of the running tracks, how well they're isolated from Earth, their impedance to ground, I've heard tell by some of the reports I've read, it can be high as 1,000 ohms per mile, it can be as low as 1 ohm per mile of track impedance to ground, depending on all kinds of local conditions. And when it comes to where the current is really flowing, how much of it is flowing through Mother Earth, as opposed to, if this is the most ideal world, the majority of your current would be from third rail through the railroad car motor, and then down to the railroad tracks, and that would be the complete circuit, so to speak. And it wouldn't use grounding to Mother Earth. But life is really complicated when it comes to various currents flowing through Earth, giving you mysterious measurements at some places. KD2HUC, K2RIW, Steve. See if you can clear this up. I've only got a very fuzzy picture, as you can tell. You've got it, Steve.
Hi. The first question I have for Andy is the Radiax cable. Does it terminate on both ends to two locations? In other words, does it run completely up from one station to the next in its entirety, and the shield terminated at both ends? That's my first question for Andy.
I'm going to guess on this one, Andy, that you, from the evidence you've seen, the Radiax cable goes through various adapters and coaxial cable coming into a bulkhead at the equipment cabinet, and it appears to do that on each end. Therefore, there's reason to believe the Radiax cable is grounded to a equipment cabinet at each end, at two adjacent stations, so to speak. The evidence you've seen suggests that that might be true, is what I'm guessing. The W-A-2-C-D-L, K-2-R-I-W in the tech net, you've got it, Andy.
Yes, it is. The shield portion of the connector at the end of the radiating or non-radiating cable was connected to cabinet ground, wherever the cabinets are located. And what I didn't understand is when you said shield terminated, I'm assuming that you meant shield grounded when you used the word terminated. The shield is grounded at the end. Back to you. Back to you.
And I'm about to go to Steve. So therefore, if the current's being pumped into ground at thousands of amperes, pumped into Earth, Mother Earth, at various places, you've got various power supplies along the track, because you don't want to ship the 650 volts of the third rail down the 50 miles of track, so to speak. So you've got periodic substations, I'm going to call them, as local power generators. That start off with something like 13 kilovolts of force of three phase AC 60 cycle, doing full wave rectification, maybe with delta Y transformers and so on. So you're getting really 12 pulses per cycle. Hopefully, there's no filtering per se, but you get some very smooth voltage out of that kind of a system when it's working well. But thousands of amperes are being pumped into that third rail periodically along the system. And depending on whether or not the thing that's holding the radiax cable has cut through the outer insulation of that cable and locally grounded it to the wall, so to speak, you can get some mysterious currents. On top of that, the exact potential in millivolts and microvolts of the grounding at station A and station B, which are, let's say, 2 miles apart, that can create some potential differences, creating currents in the cable. That's a speculation on my part. KD2HUC, K2RW. You've got it, Steve.
A couple of things at play here. First, whenever you have an electrified rail that is utilizing a signal system, okay, the running rails are isolated, or not, I shouldn't say they're isolated. They are not intentionally grounded. There are all kinds of unintentional grounding. We've all been in the stuff. The rails get underwater. You know, it's no different on my rail than there. There are a bunch of unintentional paths to ground through the ties and whatnot. Let me let it drop. So then what you end up with is ultimately voltage gradients along the track, and, you know, for all intents and purposes, you use zero and the negative station. That's where all the tracks are equalized and connected to the negative and rectifier. You mark that as zero, and then as you go out, the voltage increases based upon soil conductivity and how many, you know, connection points to the running rails there are and how much current is involved and so on and so forth. You're not going to change that. The only thing that you can do, Andy, is engineer around it. Now, there's a couple of things that you can do that'll solve your problem. Let me let it drop. The first thing is multiple points of protection are out. Gas tubes, solid-state MOVs, anything like that. They're dumb devices, and they will work in reverse. If the cable represents a path to a point of lower potential somewhere down the track, they will actually conduct and allow straight current onto the cable. And that's the center conductor we're talking about. So you want to stay away from that. If you want to put protection, you do it at one point only. Okay? Let me let it drop. Second, the shield has to be grounded at only one end. Come up with a standard, and that's what you enforce. Like, if the cable runs east to west, you say all cables going to the east will be grounded on the west end. So that's, you know, cables coming in from the west are ungrounded at that cabinet, going east are grounded. Something along those lines. You ground the shield only at one end. Okay? Let me let it drop. If you bring power into these cabinets, okay, the new that comes in from the utility is a grounded conductor. It's grounded at the transformer somewhere else. It is a remote path to ground, and it will cause havoc on your equipment. An isolation transformer solves this issue. You want to keep everything that references ground to the same ground, because the DC will find it. Any potential difference, it will find a way in. Let me let it drop. There's one more thing you have to do.
Back off your mic a little bit.
At the end, grounded. What you need to do is you need to thoroughly insulate that shield, okay? It needs to be insulated to protect personnel from the potential difference from the cabinet to that shield. If they touch it, whatever that potential gradient is for however far the distance of that cable goes, That's what any person who's touching the shield and ground simultaneously will get. So you have to insulate it for personnel protection. That should solve your problem. I don't know what kind of grounding system you're doing. I like around this environment if you put a copper halo ground system and then you attach everything to one single point on that halo. That gives you a very low relative resistance to Earth, but it also makes you immune to voltage gradients along the track. KD2HUC, back to net.
Okay, Steve, we're getting dropouts of your words once every 20 seconds or so. You have to lower your audio a little bit. Whatever distance you've got to that mic, increase it by a couple of inches so that we don't get dropouts of words. Now, when you ground the Radiax shield only on one end, like over the western end, as Andy suggested, that removes one of the sources of stray currents going into a cabinet. However, if any of the hangers on the wall are a metallic object that happens to cut through the outer insulation of the Radiax cable, and to inspect that would be very difficult. So I've heard from Bob that if you use a thermal imaging camera and you look at the hangers, the one that's got current flowing through it creates a little bit of heat, and you'll see an increase in temperature with a thermal imaging camera. And the thermal imaging camera will show you hangers that are running hotter, which means current is flowing. Let me drop it. So even though the Radiax cable is only grounded at the western end, we'll say, because the intermediate distance where the Radiax cable is suspended from the wall, the hangers is grounded to the wall, and the wall having a various potentials because local current is leaking into it from less than ideal insulation of the rails to earth, and 5,000 ampere power supplies periodically along those rails. You still have another source of potential leakage current from shield to cabinet at one end. If it's only the western end that's grounded, then the western end could have some mysterious currents flowing. There we go. So you might still see some mysterious currents flowing into the cabinet. Therefore, when you try to put your digital ohm meter between cabinet and bus bar for that particular equipment room, the needle is going to dance and give you these funny readings, is what potentially is going to happen. You might have some further information on this one, Steve. KD2HUC, K2RIW in the TechNet. What you've got is a definite improvement, but it may not be a perfect solution yet. You've got it, Steve.
Truthfully, Dick, I do things down the subway. The way things are isolated, copper cable hangers are porcelain. They're not metallic. But an easy check that you can do is isolate the cable at both ends, isolate the shield at both ends, and measure the shield to earth. If there's a clamp that's cutting through the insulation, the insulation is compromised, you'll see it that you should have a perfect open with a DC megger, and this way you don't get any coupling, and you'll know right away if one of those clamps has compromised it. I figured that they would use porcelain too, just for the same issues, but maybe not. KD2HUC, back to net.
Yeah, if
they said something.
Yeah, if they were all porcelain and every one of them had perfect insulation, that's great. But they can get dirty, they can get conductive, and even if you've got periodic grounding of those hangers, to ask the people running the subway system to go and fix that when you've got a hanger every couple of feet, you've got thousands and thousands of these hangers, they're not going to want to change that. Andy, W2CDL, K2RIW, be great, Andy.
Okay, first, let me just see if that Bob is back on. I hope he really didn't leave, but I guess he did. It's W2AXC, are you on board? It's not, okay. Yeah, he could clear up a lot of this discussion. He's more of the authority on this than I am.
But as far as the hangars, no. Just to give you some inside information, transit specifications for anything that's installed has to be stainless steel. All hangars holding radiax and non-radiax cable, that means radiating and non-radiating cable, are supported by stainless steel hangars. That's their specification. All screws have to be stainless steel and cabinets. And the list goes on and on. All right. I'm going to wrap this up with my end because I got to get to work tomorrow. It's already 10:42. And it seems like Bob left. So we'll continue this discussion. It's not going to go away. It's an interesting problem that we found. And mainly it's a transit issue. They're going to be hopefully looking into this to see what's going on and where it's coming from, because that is something that I can't do. Let me write a drop. Steve, I thank you for your input on that, and also Dick, because you don't see something like this every day, and it surprised the electricians who were actually making this measurement. And this measurement was made only because transit themselves wanted this measurement made. They're the ones that created this this measurement. I'm not going to say issue, but they specified the grounding, the integrity of the ground be made, and they're the ones that did it themselves. And when they saw this problem, they went to us. They went to us thinking that we did something, and now we realize it's not us, it's them in the first place. So, this is what goes on. I'm sure Eric has seen a lot of this stuff also in the industry. So thanks, Dick, and we'll continue next time. Hopefully we'll get Bob back as some more information emerges. K2RAW, WHCVM.
Yeah, Bob was in there earlier, made a number of transmissions, and then we went into the television subject, and I can see from Bob's point of view, it looks like we're going to be discussing television for a long period of time. He thought his subject was finished, and therefore he went to sleep, full sight. And so the fact that we're on this subject for a half hour, he didn't know that that was coming, we didn't know that that was coming. And now that we know that all the hangars are stainless steel, I can see how somebody added a test procedure in order to make sure that human safety, they want to make sure that each of the equipment cabinets are well grounded to the local bus bar of each individual equipment room. And so therefore, to simply propose a ohmmeter test between cabinet and bus bar is a reasonable thing to do. But where mysterious currents are flowing, that poor ohmmeter, no matter what kind of an ohmmeter you use, even a milliohmmeter, when you've got amperes of current flowing by way of a leakage between cable and cabinet, it's going to give funny readings. And therefore, a traditional method of measuring ohms between cabinet and bus bar is not going to work in this case. Let me drop it. So as you can see, Steve, that because all the hangers are stainless steel, and the hangers are connected to the wall with stainless steel screws, I'm guessing, there are multiple places where leakage currents could be injected into the system, because the word ground, the word earth, takes on a mysterious reading when you've got the milliohms of cable. You've got this very large copper diameter of the outer shield of the radiax cable with a very low number of ohms per foot, and you've got a large number of stainless steel hangers holding that to the wall and potentially being grounded. So there's lots of ways that the leakage currents could be injected into that system. KD2HUC for any further information. K2RIW, you got it, Steve.
You know, Dick, there's two things with that. One is fixing the issue that the current would cause. Two is just satisfying the TA's measurement. If they're just looking to satisfy the measurement and they don't really care about the presence of the current, and you disconnect the radiacs from the cabinet. You do the bus bars, the impedance from the grounding in the cabinet to the ground system and whatnot is not going to change by unplugging or plugging in a coax. You coaxes, you check to make sure the integrity of the ground meets the specification, you plug your coax back in. If that's all we're looking to do, it's a simple thing. Let me let it drop.
You've got to lower your audio a little bit and wait for the beeps. Over to you, Steve.
I'm actually coming into the 147 machine, Dick. I'm hearing the beep.
I'm not talking about the beep. Your audio is periodically getting large enough that the repeater is the 375 machine is periodically dropping out. So you gotta back off a little bit from the mic, otherwise we're missing every fifth word. Over to you, Steve.
Oh, I'm sorry. Somehow my micing got turned all the way up. The as far as, you know, with the stuff that I work on, the presence of the stray current is destructive. So we can't just mask it. We have to, you know, engineer around it. And it's, you know, that's why we have isolation. But if the equipment that Andy's installing is immune and doesn't take issue with the presence of the current, and he's just looking to meet specification, disconnect the radiacs, do the test, reconnect it. Done deal. KD2HUC, back to net.
The PH4RY.
Joe recognized what you just suggested, Steve, is a little bit too simplistic. Yes, when you disconnect the radiac, and therefore the mysterious source of leakage current to the cabinet disappears, and then you do your ohmmeter measurement, that's going to give you the right ohmmeter measurement. They cannot disconnect that radiax. That radiax is periodically carrying vital signals that are being transmitted down that system. And so a guy might be hollering Mayday, a transit policeman might be on his handy-talkie hollering Mayday over that radiax system at the instant that you disconnect that cable. So to periodically disconnect that cable, I'm almost positive that Andy will tell us that cannot be done. Over to you for any comments on this one, Steve, first. KD2HUC, K2LIW.
I doubt very much that they're going to be doing the test repeatedly. I didn't get that from anything that Andy said. I'm assuming that they were doing it as part of the testing process. I mean, even we, once we validate a ground system, done. We never go back and look at it again. So, I mean, if he's still in the commissioning process, then disconnecting the radiac should be possible. And even so, I mean, we do regular tunnel tests and whatnot where, you know, stuff is shut down. It's usually done on the overnight, and alternate methods are put into effect for the, you know, 15, 20 minutes that they're doing their testing. But Andy will have to give us more detail on that. Like I said, by me, that would work. KD2HUC, back to net.
No, it wouldn't, Steve. The radiax cable is part of a previously installed system a whole lot of years ago. It's not part of the new equipment being installed or being verified. So the radiax system has been there for years. There's 300 stations. In theory, there's at least 300 equipment rooms where a confirmation of grounding is required. And so to open up 300 radiax cables is out of the question because of interruption of the vital signals that might be flowing through at that time. And in your case, you might have a time at 2 o'clock in the morning, and when your system is turned down, the subway system is never turned down. It runs 24/7. So opening up that radiax cable to confirm grounding, I think, is a no-no in this case, Steve. I think we need a more sophisticated possible solution for the confirmation of grounding of the cabinets in the cabinet rooms being aggravated by a system that was installed a large number of years ago, which is not part of Andy's installation. And is that extra leakage current creating grief? There's no evidence it's creating grief. It's just creating grief in the methods of confirming the integrity of the grounding of the cabinet to the bus bar in the equipment room. KD2HUC, K2LIW, go ahead for the comment on that one, Steve.
Well, Dick, I'll tell you. No, we don't shut down either. We're around 24/7. Like I said, we have backup systems. We don't test for everything at once. There are multiple systems because what do you do if a heliacs fail? If a radiacs fails, it can't be down. Can't shut down a tunnel. So I'm sure there's got to be multiple cables up there. We do. I'm sure they would. But if he's got to run around, he made it sound like he's got one spot. If he's got to run around and he's getting that much straight current, if it's not an issue yet, it's going to be, because you got to remember, when you start passing that kind of current, and especially when you're inadvertently tying it to ground at these locations, you're going to start to pass a number of amps, maybe even a number of 100, all in the order of 100 amps through the shield of that cable. How long is that cable going to last? You know what I mean? That's why I find it terribly hard to, I understand what he's saying about the stainless steel hangers. Yeah, we do that too. The B-line stainless steel hangers have a porcelain insert that goes inside the hanger, and so that the stainless steel doesn't actually touch to the cable. That's the way we do it. Evidently, they don't do it that way. I could see them running into some serious problems later on in life. But KD2HUC, back to net.
Yeah, this previously installed Radiac system has been around for a large number of years. There's no evidence to date that the leakage current has created grief. And yes, it is some number of amperes at times. And I think Andy has already measured three stations, and three consecutive stations have funny leakage currents. That makes an ohmmeter go crazy when you try to confirm grounding with a simple ohmmeter between cabinet and local bus bar ground. So the fact that he's measured three, and three have various kinds of crazy dancing of an ohmmeter, would suggest that a high percentage of the 300 stations probably have this condition. Now, it may not be a fault condition. It's just a condition that gives an apparent fault when you do a simple ohmmeter test. Joe might have a suggestion on this one. W-A-2-R-Y-Y, K-2-R-I-W. Go ahead, Joe.
Well, I wasn't going to make any comment about the subject you're talking about. What I was going to just simply say was I listened to Steve's audio on 147.375 simultaneously by listening to the system on 146.85. First thing I noticed, the audio is louder coming out on 85 than his audio is on 147.375. And number two, occasionally his voice would trip out on Glen Oaks and not trip out on Selden. That was my comment.
I understand. And in the case, because of the way the system is currently configured and working, Steve did lower his audio and it got better. Okay. I'll go over to Andy for any final comments on this. And this is a continuing investigation, which is not going to go away overnight. Like all conditions, it's never as simple as everyone would like it to believe it's going to be. To B2CDL for any final comments. K2RIW. Go ahead, Andy.
I do have a comment on the subject you're talking about, actually, I think about it.
Andy first. Go ahead, Andy.
Okay, actually, the timing is good because I just got back home and it's 10:55. Yeah, well, what you said, Dick, was right as far as, does it affect the system? No. Does it show that there's a problem? Well, not with the grounding itself, but because of the stray current that we are seeing, it's making it appear as if a ground is not there, or connection is poor, or what have you. And if you have an electrician that's measuring from point A to point B on a ground wire and sees a resistance jumping, the first conclusion would be that we got a poor connection somewhere. In this case, it's not the case. So, again, this is a transit call. They'll have to see what they want to do, maybe change the specification, and compensate for what we're seeing, what they're seeing, I should say. And we're seeing it also. All right, I got to go because I got to go to work tomorrow. So good night to all, and thanks for all input, and we'll continue because, as Dick, as you said, it's not going away so quickly. We'll continue this discussion because I'd like to know exactly where this is, how this is getting into the system. Which will be the next phase. See you later. K2RIW, W82CDL, going to sleep now. Good night.
82HUC with one more comment, Dick.
Okay, we've got Joe and Steve in that order. By the way, one of the crazy things that happens here, when you put your digital voltmeter, a DVM in the ohmmeter scale between cabinet and busbar, and you see the resistance, the apparent resistance, a relatively high number and dancing around, particularly as a station, as a subway goes through that particular station, it'll really dance in funny ways. If you reverse the two leads on your DVM and you continue to measure ohms, quite often it'll measure negative ohms, which of course is the straight current is making the voltage drop that the ohm meter is trying to see to measure ohms, and it gets a negative reading, and again dancing, it'll really drive you up a wall. Joe had a further comment, and then Steve in that order. To be 2RYY, K2RYW, go ahead, Joe.
Very good. Well, thinking that these digital meters are very sensitive, much differently than a Simpson 260 measuring on RX1, what you might be seeing is RF impressed on the cable. Some sort of RF being impressed on the shield of the cable. Has anybody ever thought of checking that to see, because they do run near, up and down the tunnels and things like that. But I mean, and there's other communications in this tunnel also. From other devices, but is it possible that you're seeing RF impressed on the cable itself, being that you're using radiacs? It might be from within itself, or some other RF sources being impressed on the cable. Back to you.
That's possible, Steve, but unlikely. The level of the signals there are not that great. On top of that, if it was RF impressed on the cable, giving you a funny, positive, apparent number of ohms that dances, and then you reverse the two leads, you wouldn't get negative current out of RF into a digital voltmeter. So the DC current, leakage current, by all measurements to date, appears to be the major causative action, particularly if you put a clamp-on ammeter on the radiax cable, around the radiax cable, and you measure numbers like 5 amperes of DC current on a clamp-on ammeter that's circling the cable. That's a pretty strong piece of evidence that that's a source of leakage current. Over to you, Steve. KD2HUC, K2RIW in the TechNet.
You know, Dick, as I'm sitting here thinking, there's one other thing he can try. The TA does high voltage relay testing. We all have to. So they would have a calibrated AC current source in order to test some of the ANSI functions. If you apply a known AC voltage across the grounding system and then use a split core CT, current transformer, around the ground conductor, and you measure the current, you can then calculate what the impedance is, and the current transformer is not going to be affected by DC. So you might be able to do that. It'll make his measurements immune to DC, to the presence of the DC current. 82 HUC, back to net.
There's a yes and a no to that one, Steve. When you're measuring AC millivolts drop on some number of amperes of current flowing through a system, you're doing a four-leaded ohmmeter test, so to speak, but you're doing it in an AC manner. In the presence of simultaneous DC, as long as your AC current measuring hardware is capacitively coupled, if it's got the equivalent of a high-pass filter, kind of say, for instance, you're testing at a 1 kc rate, yes. However, there's various kinds of AC meters, which when you're measuring AC voltage in the presence of simultaneous DC, because they are directly connected and not capacitively coupled, the presence of the DC will give an apparent AC magnitude. So when DC current is present, even though you're making an AC measurement, you've got to be careful which AC meter are you using. Some of them are DC sensitive. You see what I'm worried about on this one? I have seen AC meters that will give crazy readings in the presence of simultaneous DC. I mean, the ACMA you're trying to measure might be 1 volt RMS, but if it happens to be simultaneously 1 volt of DC riding on that signal, on that circuit, then the meter can go kind of crazy. KD2HUC, K2RIW.
Yeah, no, I was thinking do it the other way, Dick. You have a calibrated source. You set the voltage to, say, 5 volts AC. You apply the current, you apply that to the conductor in question. You then use a current transformer. The current transformer, I mean, DC is not going to induce any additional current into the current transformer. DC doesn't induce, does it? So you should only see the AC output of the transducer, of the current transformer. It usually is 0 to 5. You measure the magnitude of the current, and then you can calculate. In other words, you're not actually taking the voltage measurement off of the conductor that's in question, because I see what you're saying. The DC could offset it. But if you use a current transformer, that should negate the presence of the DC. Do you see where I'm going with that?
Yes, I do, and that's a good suggestion, Steve. But there's a further problem. You said you're going to put 5 volt AC on the circuit in question. You cannot do that. If you're using a constant current source, and you're putting some amount of current AC on the circuit, and then looking for the current picked up by a transformer, no problem. The circuit in question might have 1 milliohm of real resistance between cabinet and bus bar. You try to put 5 volts AC across 1 milliohm, and you're going to get 5,000 amperes flowing if your circuit could provide it. So you're using an AC current source, I'll agree. A constant voltage source across a milliohm circuit, I don't recommend that. KD2HUC, K2RIW.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm saying. You use a calibrated, it's a limited current source. But you calibrate it, they use it for relay testing. Lobe will know what that is, the source that I'm referring to. I'm sure they have it, I'm sure they have multiple of them. And they're actually used to test the low impedance coils of protective relaying. Other than that, I really don't know how else he's going to get past that test. Because, like I said, there's nothing you're going to do to mitigate the presence of that DC. The magnitude of power behind it, there's nothing you're going to do to get rid of it, unless you're going to shut the branch down when you take the measurements, and they're not going to let you do that. That I can tell you. KD2HEC.
I know of a potential way of making the problem go away, and whether or not they want to make the change required is something else. We'll discuss that later, maybe next week. But there is a way of making the leakage current disappear. And you can probably guess what I'm thinking about. But it's going to require some bucks. You're going to have to add another component to the system. And they're going to be reluctant to do that, and I don't blame them. We haven't gone over to our science or physics section yet today. I'm almost positive that Dr. Roy, AC2GS, is on frequency. And I have a puzzle I'd like to pose to you guys, and maybe Roy has got a better one. I'm going to turn it over to Roy first before I take the wind out of the sail tonight, and sorry to keep you waiting so long, Roy. AC2GS for any of the above, K2RIW. Go ahead, Roy. Okay, maybe Roy's not here tonight. A quick puzzle I've got for you guys. Assume you've got an astronaut in a spacesuit, and his spacesuit is slightly inflated in order to, it's got a slight extra pressure inside to make sure the spacesuit is inflated. The astronaut with the spacesuit goes into a space testing chamber, and he's going to stand on a scale in that chamber. So he's standing on the scale, he's making a measurement of his apparent weight with the spacesuit on. You close the door, and you evacuate the air in the chamber. After you evacuate the air and he's now in a vacuum, as far as the chamber is concerned, and his spacesuit is maintaining his life, and he's looking at that scale, will the scale make any change in its apparent reading? You guys have an opinion on this one? Give me your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
D2IS. Yep.
Okay. Bill recognized. Anyone else? Let's get the people on the list who want to make a guess. Anyone else besides Bill? Give me your call letters right now.